Welcome to this Wednesday's edition of Main Street here on Prairie Public. I'm your host, Craig Blumenschein. In the second half of today's show, we're taking Prairie Plates on the road, or perhaps in this case, just down the street. Rick Yon and my colleague Eric Dethridge visit Sons of Norway in Fargo, and they'll try out a Lefse burger. Additionally, Tom Brousseau, host of the Great American Folk Show, checks in on the Opera House in Mattock, North Dakota. But first, if you're looking for weekend plans, we've got you covered. The 12th annual Bluegrass Goes Pink event is happening this Saturday at Cross Ranch State Park. Jill Weiss will join us to discuss the importance of this fundraiser for the Bismarck Cancer Center Foundation, and she shares a deeply personal story on how the event began. And the Fargo Air Show returns this Saturday and Sunday, and we'll start the show with my conversation with Darren Hall, the event's co-chairman. Darren Hall, welcome to Main Street.
Thanks, Craig. Glad to be here.
It is a busy week in preparation for the Fargo Air Show. This started as an event in 1989. Give us a little bit of its history, and then we'll talk about what everyone can expect this weekend.
Yeah, so 89 was the first year. Actually, the first Fargo Air Show was back in 1939. We've actually got footage of the next year, 1940, of the real first couple air shows in Fargo, which was really neat to see. The entity as it is today started in 1989, and this will be our 14th show. So we do a show every couple of years. We're never guaranteed to do a show, but we put in the request to the major teams like the Blue Angels, who are here this year, or the Thunderbirds we had, I think, in 2019. And if we get one of those teams, we're going to do an air show.
So that's kind of the genesis for creating this year's show.
Yeah, so we build off of that. They announce their shows 2 years in advance. So when we get the notification that they've selected Fargo as their location, and for example, the Blue Angels will do shows in about 30 cities, 32 cities, I think, this year. So they'll do 64 shows. We're so thankful they choose Fargo. And they've chosen Fargo many years. And they love to come to North Dakota and recruit in this area. It's a recruiting tool for the Navy. But what we build around that and them as the main attraction, there are so many things that come together over the 2 years of planning that are coming together this week that will just be a fantastic show.
So the show is July 27th and 28th. The gates open at 9 o'clock each day. Is that right, Darren?
Correct.
And the performances begin at 11 and last throughout the whole day. What can visitors expect to see?
Yeah, so as you come onto the show grounds, you're entering the restricted area of the airport. And this is one of the reasons we do an air show. Number one, yes, we're entertaining people with all the performing acts for the show. But it's the one time every couple of years, whenever we do this, that we open the gates to the airport and invite the community in. Our industry is in aerospace, oftentimes lives behind an 8-foot fence like we have here at the Hector International Airport that says restricted area, keep out. And so how does anybody, especially the next generation of aviators, whether that be a mechanic or a pilot or an engineer, how do they ever learn about what happens in aerospace? Because of the fence. And the fence is there for a very specific purpose. So this is our opportunity to invite the community in to learn about all these different facets of aviation, inspire the next generation. A big part of it is honoring our veterans and those who are serving our country and our law enforcement, and those that are protecting our community. So that's a big focus of it. One of the last reasons why we do an air show is we give back to our community. Everything, we joke that it's a Norwegian business plan. Anything we make as an air show, we give back to the community.
How do you do that?
In donations. So the Fargo Air Museum has been a benefactor of that, where we'll donate thousands of dollars to the Fargo Air Museum, to the Roger Maris Cancer Center, from any of the profits that we'll make out of the show. We'll keep a little bit in the bank. So if we do have the opportunity to do another show in the future, we'll have the funds to get that started. And then even the volunteers, we have about 450 volunteers each day on the show grounds that are working our chalets, our concession tents, they're helping out with parking, gate admissions, so they're all over the grounds. And even those volunteers, we actually pay them. It's a fundraising opportunity for their service club, or the cheerleader group, or the Boy Scouts, whichever group it is, it's a fundraising opportunity for them. So they'll come out and work 1 day or 2 days during the show. And so we're paying all of our volunteers. And so over those, you know, since 1989, the air show itself has given into the community over $700,000.
it's important to pay a cost of admission. It's $30 per day.
Yeah, you're supporting the air show by doing that, but you're also supporting the community. And, you know, the cost for us to put this show on started back when we talk about 1989, Dick Walstead, the founder of this air show, put up a second mortgage on his house in order to fund and get this the Fargo Air Show off its feet and to do that first show. And that was a couple hundred thousand back then. We are over $1.3 million in the production of this event. And so the cost for entrance, and if we think about this, we didn't raise our prices from 2021. So it's $30 right now to get in the gate as an adult. From 11 to 17, it's $20. And that's for an entire day of the highest level of entertainment you'll find in aerospace, I'll say. It's all day long. So it's not a two-hour concert that you would go to at the Fargo Dome or somewhere else. It's an all-day event. So the value you're getting out of that admission fee is super high. And if you think about it, a young family, kids under 10 are free. So a young family can come out really for, you know, $60 for the parents, and the kids are all free. And so it's a great opportunity for a young family to come out and enjoy an entire day.
You mentioned that the Blue Angels will be here, and their show is absolutely spectacular. I've had the opportunity to see them a couple times. What else will we see?
First time ever performing in North Dakota, the F-22 Raptor. It is the world's most dominant fighter aircraft. That airplane is amazing. You've seen the Blue Angels. This airplane will do its performance. It's jaw-dropping of what it can do as an aircraft. So that's just one of them. We've got a number of performers coming that really fill up the entire day. We'll have a couple airliners sneak in between some of our acts and stuff. The Fargo Air Museum is putting together a Warbird review, so we'll have anything starting out from the T-6 Trainer to a P-51 Mustang. Nice. And getting into the Korean War area, a Douglas A-1 Skyraider. We've never had that aircraft at the air show before. Kent Peach, who I grew up in Minot. Kent used to fly, or he flies air shows. His family all flies up in Minot. I learned to fly from them, and so he's going to be down. This will be over his 51st year of doing air shows. And so we're excited to have Kent back doing that. He gives a master lesson in aerobatics and actually energy management. He'll climb up to 8,000 feet, shut his engine off, and do an aerobatic routine all the way down to where he lands and ends up at show center. It's really amazing what he does. But in addition to that, we've got the Horsemen, which is a three-ship P-51 team. They're out of Texas. We've got the U.S. Air Force Heritage Flight. So when the F-22 flies, we'll have two fighter jets from, again, I think the Korean Air era, their F-5s, that they'll join up with the F-22 and do a number of passes honoring the heritage of Air Force Aviation. Tom Larkin flies a little mini jet. When he stands next to this thing, he's three times as tall as the little jet is. and he climbs into this thing. It's a little home-built airplane, but he'll do an aerobatic performance on that. And this is, he built the airplane himself. He's a former Air Force pilot turned airline pilot, and now he's an air show demo pilot.
Enjoying our conversation with Darren Hall. He's the Vice President of Business Development at the Fargo Jet Center and the co-chair of the Fargo Air Show. How do you ensure safety of both performers and the audience who will be watching?
Yeah, so we work throughout the planning process. This is, again, a two-year planning process. But right now, over these last couple months, we've got a person that controls, they're called the air boss. Every air show has one. So this is a person that's experienced in coordinating all the aerial acts on the grounds. As we are preparing for the show, we'll have a schedule for who's flying when, and this person is also in contact with the air traffic control tower. So if we have airliners coming in, they're coordinating all of that together. But we did, last week, we did an air show tabletop exercise with the airport fire department and all of the public services. So the sheriff's department, the Fargo Police Department, Sanford Health, all the entities that would be involved if there was ever any kind of accident or incident on the airport or off the airport. We went through that entire procedure of who does what and what resources are available. And so we've already done that as an exercise. The airport does it annually as a part of their normal safety routine. But so we've got professionals in place that know what they're doing and they're ready for if anything were to happen.
Have any memorable stories from past air shows, Darren, that you want to share?
Great question. If I think of like the Fargo Air Show, I've grown up around aviation my entire life, and it really wasn't until I moved to Fargo in 1991, and then that next year, I think, is we had our first air show when I was in Fargo. Super fun to be volunteering and connecting with the air show, and then growing with the air show over these past 30 years of getting more and more involved. Over the last few years before I was chairman, I was really around and set up all the logistics around the show. So if there's a table, a tent, or a chair, or an airplane, a static display, that's my job. Still doing it this year of placing everything around the grounds. And in doing that, you really get to meet everybody. You meet every performer, we'll meet all the Blue Angels, we'll meet the F-22, all the teams you get to meet. And so I don't know that there's any one that comes to mind, but every year we meet a few new people, and our air show industry is a really small industry. We'll go to an air show convention in December and a lot of times meet all the performers that we're gonna hire to come do our show. And so we build relationship with them year over year, show over show. And it's really fun to then invite them to our community, have them enjoy Fargo, the community, but then also perform in our show and inspire our audience.
The Fargo Air Show is spelled F-A-R-G-O and then A-I-R-S-H-O.
S-H-O.
There's no W there.
No W.
Why is that?
That was just a marketing thing to make it unique and stand out a little bit. And it gets people talking about it. It started in 1989 and it's been that way since.
What makes pilots want to fly in Fargo, do you think?
You know, our community is so welcoming. I see that in my job out at Fargo Jet Center every day. As people come to our community, and so many people, as they come to our community, are just blown away by the hospitality. And if that's what we do at the air show as well, for all these performers that come from around the country, we're showing off our community, not just our airport.
Thursday-ish or so, are we gonna see some Navy folks in the air?
Yeah, so the Blue Angels, the number 7 will arrive today. The rest of the team arrives tomorrow and Wednesday. But then Thursday, they'll do just probably a 1-hour flight where they're flying over the community. They're actually getting their checkpoints of how they do their maneuvers. So every airport's different, every community's different. So they have checkpoints that they'll do those on Thursday. And then Friday is actually a full rehearsal for the air show. So everybody that wants to fly, that are performers in our show, can fly and rehearse their act. The Blues will do their full performance for sure. We invite disabled veterans out. The Veterans Home in Lisbon is coming out. And so we host them just because they're mobility challenged. And it's closed to the public, but this is a way to again, honor those who have served. And they'll be able to interact with some of the performers that day as they're out here for the show. But it's a full performance. You'll see them flying over backyards. We talk about that a lot, is so many people get excited about the air show and they say, oh, they fly over my backyard. We sit in the backyard and watch them. Well, you're not seeing the air show. And there's so much on the grounds of the air show that you're missing. If you think of the Sanford helicopter that does all the air medical flights, it flies over our community every day multiple times. Many people don't really know much about it other than it's a helicopter flying around. That aircraft will be on static display with the crew, have it opened up so you can see inside and talk to the crews about what that is. And we'll have multiple different types of airplanes that'll be available for that you would never see because of the fence normally. But even to the performers, the acts of an air show are meant to be right in front of the crowd. So if you're in your backyard seeing it, you're just seeing the split second of them flying over your house, which may be really neat, but you're not really seeing the air show.
There'll be a PA system and there'll be people telling you why the pilots are doing what they're doing at any given time.
Yeah, Phil Dacey is our air show announcer. We've got a full public address system. Through his knowledge of air shows, a lot of times even talking through the act will have the Blue Angels has their own narrator for their show. Phil Dacey is our narrator for the rest of the air show for all the civilian acts. So when Kent Peach is flying or Tom Larkin or the Warbirds, he'll be narrating over the top of that so people understand what they're seeing in the sky.
People can learn more before the event. How?
At FargoAirShow.com.
Do you encourage people to buy tickets in advance or at the gate?
They can buy them either way they want. We love for them to buy them in advance. That helps and simplifies things as they're coming out. And as you come in, you'll enter right off of 19th Avenue. There's a gate right next to the Air Museum. If you're a Chalet or a VIP Chalet holder, in the Commander Chalet or our Flightline Club. Those are upgraded tickets where you get food and drinks and beverages. There's still some tickets available. A lot of tickets available, I think, on Sunday in one of the areas. Saturday we're sold out, but general admission will never sell that out. Those tickets are certainly available, and you won't find better parking than we have for the Fargo Air Show anywhere in the country. We use all the Fargo Dome lots, the grass areas that are adjacent to the Fargo Dome parking. We use all those grass lots. If you went to another air show, example would be maybe Sioux Falls. I think you have to park in an offsite and get in a bus to get transported to the airport where the air show grounds are. So super convenient to just park at the dome, walk across the street, and you're at the air show.
The Fargo Air Show returns to Hector International Airport Saturday and Sunday, July 27th and 28th. And we've enjoyed our conversation with co-chair Darren Hall. Darren, best wishes for a successful show.
Craig, thanks for coming out today. We're super excited. Just would love for the community. Follow us on all of our social media. We've got an awesome volunteer social media team. So anything, it's all at Fargo Air Show. Again, no W on the end of that. But you'll find us on Facebook and Instagram, and then our website, same thing. You can find any information. There's a fact page of what you can bring out to the air show, what you can't bring to the air show. All that information's on our website.
Best wishes.
Craig, thanks so much.
More Main Streets ahead. Stay with us.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by North Dakota Living, celebrating 70 years of featuring the great people and places of North Dakota, and proudly serving the members of North Dakota's electric cooperatives.
And welcome back to Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm your host, Craig Blumenschein, and Jill Weiss joins me. Jill, welcome back to Main Street.
Oh, it's good to be back, Craig.
We're going to talk again about the annual, this is the 12th annual Bluegrass Goes Pink event. It's at Cross Ranch State Park this Saturday, and it begins at 8 o'clock in the morning. Jill?
Oh boy, yep.
What's going to happen this weekend?
Well, I tell you, the park is going pink, honestly, and 8 o'clock on Saturday morning is registration at the Visitor's Center for the Fun 5-10K Walk Run. And we invite everyone to come out for that. It's $20 and you get a shirt or a tank top, whichever you need. We have lots of folks come out. We had 108 last year.
Great.
And a lot of folks like to come out and do these fun walk runs because we aren't timing you and you don't get like a bib or a number. We welcome dogs on a leash, and when the dog finishes the race, they get their own hot pink water bowl to take home with them. And then kids can ride their bikes if they want on the trails. A lot of young moms will bring kids in a stroller, and it's just a beautiful place to do this walk run on the trails, and part of it is along the right along the Missouri River too.
We should pause just a moment. This is an important benefit for the Bismarck Cancer Center Foundation. Tell me more about that.
So the foundation has been established for a number of years now, and through the foundation, our patients receive a gas card when they start their treatment, and that helps so much for them, you know, driving back and forth from wherever. They get two free massages a week while they're on treatment doing radiation. The patients absolutely love that time. That's with Courtney, and then we have Jen, our social worker, and we call her our emotional support staff member. She's there for the families if they need some support or, you know, talking if they need to see anybody, if anyone's having a hard time, and, you know, helps them with, like social workers do, just helps them with their situation. We also have yoga on Mondays for the patients, and even after they, you know, graduate from radiation. We have Amanda's our dietitian on staff. She's a special cancer dietitian, so she has lots of, you know, things for the patients to try, like different protein drinks if they have throat cancer or, you know, something like that. And then we also have 20 apartments that are within, they're right across the street and kind of in our parking lot. So kind of like a Ronald McDonald place for adults, I always say. And I think they charge $20 a night or it's incredible. Free if you don't have the funds. So that's all put on by the foundation.
Why is this personal to you, Jill?
Oh, boy. Well, my sister, Barb Wild, developed breast cancer at age 39, and she passed away in 2002 at age 50. Yeah. And she was a critical care nurse and just a wonderful, wonderful gal. She worked at St. Alexis and over at Med Center One here in Bismarck. She was a go-getter, and she would love this event because she loved Cross Ranch State Park, and she'd love that we're helping our patients, you know, directly. And, you know, I love the people that are doing research and in the lab and doing that too, but I love that I get to hand a gas card to a patient, or maybe we also help them with a prescription that maybe their insurance won't cover. And it's like, okay, well, let me get the paperwork and we'll pay for it through the foundation. So Barb would have definitely loved this event.
After the great 5-10K run walk for pets and for people.
Yep.
There'll be a free will donation supper then a little later in the day. Tell me about that.
Okay, so this event has morphed into a really good supper. All of the Washburn churches and the Washburn ambulances are involved, and this is a free will offering for your supper. And the Catholics, I'll tell you the meal. The Catholics are going to do the hamburgers and hot dogs. The Methodists are having watermelon. The Baptists are serving coleslaw, and the Lutherans are doing baked beans. The new church in town, Journey Church, will be helping as well, and they'll hand out bottled water, and they'll assist the Washburn ambulance with cupcakes and pink lemonade.
Then we get to have some more fun.
Oh, yes.
And this is where you're directly involved. You're directly involved with the whole thing.
We're going to play a little bluegrass music. We kick off the concert at 7 o'clock, and we just have a couple of speakers. We have the American Cancer Society will be there with a table. My favorite one, the Women's Way program, is like a national program, and that's if somebody can't afford a mammogram or a pap smear and they don't have insurance. So the Women's Way gals will take to the stage for a couple minutes. And then we have a speaker, and her name is Angie Grossman. She lives in Wilton, North Dakota. She has just finished treatment for breast cancer and bone cancer. She'll speak a little bit. She was treated with us at the Cancer Center, and she wants to kind of talk about her, you know, situation and how her experience was. And then Cottonwood will take the stage and we'll play for a little while. And then each year on our shirts, we have people we remember that have passed away of cancer. So we have 5 people on the shirts this year: John Putz, Connie Brightson, Donnie Foster, Gay Zentner, and Barbara Brewster. So all of those families will be in attendance. And about halfway through the concert, we have them come up and light a candle in memory of their loved one. And then we have like a little special gift for them. And, you know, sometimes the families will take the mic and speak a little. Sometimes they're just fine to light the candle, and that's fine too. And then we sing a really sad song by Jimmy Fortune, you know, called I Believe, and it's about heaven, and we all cry, and then we rip into some more bluegrass. And so it's a really, really diverse event. Some folks might just come out in the morning, some come out and have supper and stay for the some just come for the concert. But I'm really proud of my band. We can't thank the Cross Ranch staff enough for mowing the trails and the concert area. And of course, we do have 3 major sponsors that help put this on, and that's Rainbow Energy, H.A. Thompson and Sons, and the Aspen Realty Group. So it really helps to have those folks on board with us to help, you know, pay for the shirts and some marketing and stuff.
Goes without saying, this is truly a family event.
It really is, yep. I mean, I just get goosebumps when I think of this event. We're in the 12th year. We started it as a one-night thing, to, you know, concert to remember Barb, and we had so many people come for the cause. You know, a lot of people had never been to the state park, and some had never heard of us, but it was the cause. So when I talked to the marketing department at the Cancer Center, I'm like, I think we do this again every year as long as we're able. And the cause is so important for our patients to just have a little extra support through their radiation therapies they're going through. And it shows. I'm there working as a nurse, and it shows when they come off that massage table and we give them a gas card. And that we call it wraparound services is what we call it. And if you don't own a pink shirt, by gosh, by the end of the night, you might, you know.
Joey, it's great that you do this. This is the 12th annual Bluegrass Goes Pink event. It's at Cross Ranch State Park this Saturday. It all begins at 8 o'clock in the morning with a fun run walk registration. Then the fun run and walk follows. a supper at 5:30, and a great bluegrass concert with Jill's group Cottonwood. That's at 7 p.m. And Jill, we wish you the best and thank you for what you do with this event.
Oh, thanks for having me, Craig.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by Jade Presents, bringing the Stray Cats to Blue Stem Amphitheater in Moorhead Thursday, August 8th. We're gonna rock this town, rock it inside out. Catch songs like Runaway Boys, Rock This Town, and Stray Cat Strut. More info at jadepresents.com.
I like bagels.
Eat some barbecue.
Apple sauce and some nice red beets.
Ever there was an underdog in the best burger competition, it might be where Prairie Plates man Rick Guion and Prairie Public program manager Eric Dethridge headed to last week. The same day, massive crowds swarmed the Fargo Street Fair. As you'll hear, sampling the Lefse Burger, the unlikely winner of the coveted Downtown Fargo Burger Royale competition, was just an excuse for the pair to hang out at the cool center of Scandinavian culture in North Dakota's largest city. It's a feast for eyes as well as the taste buds on this week's Prairie Plates.
You can't help but smile when you see what looks like a wood-carved Viking ship just above the entrance to the Sons of Norway Kringen Lodge on 2nd Avenue in Fargo. You get the feeling that you're about to walk in a friendly, happy place. And then you do walk in, and greeting you, warm wood paneling and themed wallpaper, definitely kind of a 70s vibe to it. Then you walk by the lounge, where there are hand-carved trolls and murals on the wall. Very cool. But for at least a year, right by the stack of trays where you put in your order with one of the super friendly volunteers, you'll notice a glass-encased, probably faux gold trophy of a quadruple stacked burger that might have even made 70s era Elvis's mouth water.
Thank you very much. There isn't disco playing, but maybe there should be. And there's the burger right there.
The one everyone's talking about, or you probably heard about.
Yes, and that thing everybody's talking about and Rick is about to devour is a supersized burger fit for a Viking, the Lefse Crunch Burger, which recently won the prestigious 2024 Downtown Fargo Burger Royale.
It's two pieces of Lefse, a burger patty, looks like bacon, Jarlsberg cheese, an onion ring, and lingonberry sauce, which I love lingonberry sauce.
What is lingonberry sauce?
Lingonberry is a little berry that comes from a shrub, like a spruce shrub. It's very unique. And then they add a bunch of sugar to it. Obviously, that's what makes it good. And then it's like a sweet, savory sort of combination. They use it with meatballs, too, and it's just one of those things that really fits. You wouldn't think it would, but it does.
All right, let's not let it get cold. Let's have you dig into that. And I should add that as the garnish, there is a flag of Norway affixed to the top of the Lefse. First impression, sir?
It's very good. Award-winning, well-deserved. But the lingonberry sauce makes it. It's just a sweet, savory combo with the saltiness of the bacon and the onion ring. Great combo. I can see why they won.
So Lefse, what all goes into making Lefse like this? It looks like it's kind of toasted somewhat.
It is, and just think about it like a potato tortilla. I mean, they use fresh potatoes or potato flour, that sort of thing.
So a Jarlsberg cheese, explain for the uninitiated.
That is like a Swiss cheese. And it's really good, a little bit of salty, a little bit of funk.
Yeah, you host a segment called Prairie Plates, and we talk about food, and we're, of course, talking about the Lefse burger. Yeah.
My son absolutely loved that.
Lifelong Fargo and Emily Brooks couldn't help but notice the odd sight at the next table over of someone holding up a microphone to another's mouth as he merrily consumed the star attraction. As a Lefse rolling volunteer herself, Emily told us what goes into making the Crunch Burger quote-unquote bun.
It takes a lot of rolling. You need a lot of arm strength to do it. You have to roll it out to a certain size so you get consistency. And there's a whole assembly line that goes on.
Patty Hagen paid us a visit as well. She makes a lot of the food at the Sons of Norway, like soups and the other homespun themed burgers, the Oli, the Lena, the Sven, and the Oofta burgers. As popular as the Lefse Crunch Burger is, Patty explains why it's available only for a limited time.
It's a very labor-intensive burger because of the Lefse, because we hand make the Lefse. So as long as we can keep getting volunteers in there to help us, and they've been really good, about helping us make these baby lefses. So as long as we can do that, we're going to try to keep it, because it's still, this week is going crazy.
Who ever thought a lefse burger, or that it would work with beef? Because don't you think of lefse as far as like holidays and something more sweet than savory?
I tend not to. When we make lefse here and I get to take a piece home, I'll have it with peanut butter in the morning. I was open to different things, and we wanted to do something Norwegian, keep it Norwegian themed if we could, but we figured we couldn't do lutefisk.
I doubt if that would have won.
We thought about a Lutaburger, but
that's next year.
Yeah, possibly.
So from the drawing board to the stove, describe the trial and error process of making it work.
There wasn't a lot of trial and error, because not only is it a crunchy burger, we were under the crunch to get it done. And we were going, okay, how do we do this? How are we going to do this? And one would add this, one would say, let's add this, let's add that. And I kind of came up with a lingonberry chipotle glaze. Allison came up with, we got to have an onion ring on there for crunch. Jacob was probably going, we need bacon, you know, so we all just collaborated and got her done.
Well, what went into that glaze? Because Rick keeps saying that the glaze is what makes the burger.
I cannot tell.
It's a secret family recipe.
I was at Spitfire one time and I had their chicken ciabatta with, I think it was raspberry chipotle glaze, and I went, I'm going to make a lingonberry one. So we did.
And what made you decide on the Jarlsberg cheese?
It's Norwegian. And it doesn't melt quite as well as the Swiss. We thought, well, we better have a little of both to give it that melt.
So did you start getting reaction from your customers before you knew that you were going to win? Were you starting to feel like, oh, there's a groundswell of support for this, and maybe we have a chance?
We had a lot of good compliments from people that we know are kind of critical on food. And they're going, this is excellent. This is top notch. So we're like, well, maybe, you know.
So describe the day that you got the news.
We were in the kitchen, and they walked in, and they said, you won. And we brought your trophy, and we're stunned, just stunned.
It's not just the wholesome food and the retro atmosphere at the Kringen Lounge at the Sons of Norway that impresses. It's the eclectic mix of people.
It's all volunteer. They come every day, well, Monday through Friday, and cook lunch, sometimes dinner. They work hard here, and the food is always very solid, and it's affordable.
As for the clientele, you'll see, as you might expect, lots of retirees, but also families and younger folks. And sitting in the back corner, chewing and chatting over news and politics, might be some Fargo movers and shakers and newspaper columnists. And while the Sons of Norway offer memberships that require some at least Norwegian-adjacent roots, or heck, even just an interest in Norwegian culture, that will get you things like discounts on food and travel, among many other benefits, all are welcome to dine at the Kringen Lodge in Fargo.
I think people from around the region should come here and try it out. And especially on Thursday is Pie Day, but you do have to get here early because the pie sells out.
Yeah, there weren't many pies in line when we were going through it. So what kind of pies do they have in the display case?
Well, today I saw chocolate silk, rhubarb, peach, apple. On Thursdays, there's usually a dozen kinds of pie. So if you're a pie person, come here on Thursday, but get here 11 o'clock, 11:30, because they do sell out. It's a big crowd, and it's well-deserved because all those pies are homemade. This is definitely Fargo, Upper Midwest, Scandinavian. It's just a place to come where everyone's friendly.
As our table neighbor Emily put it best, dining with three generations of Norwegian Americans, as she was doing, at a place like Sons of Norway makes her feel closer to her family's roots.
We actually had the chance to travel to Norway last summer as a family, and my kids, handed down for both my husband and me, are mostly Norwegian, and so it was really, really fun. But we've been coming to Sons of Norway since my kids were little, and it's fun to kind of celebrate our Norwegian heritage and learn a little bit more about it, too.
Well, I remember when I was just children, time the people used to be. A man was proud to walk up and shake.
Rick Guillon and Eric Dethridge sampling the award-winning Lefse Burger at the Sons of Norway in downtown Fargo. They're open for lunch Tuesday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. And as Rick said, better get there early for pie on Thursdays. The Trollwood Lodge is open Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday from 4:30 p.m. until 10 p.m. A trip to a small opera house in North Dakota. That's next. Stay with us.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by Trollwood Performing Arts School, presenting The Addams Family, a musical comedy full of laughs, fun for the whole family, and all the antics the famous family is known for. Tickets available at trollwood.org or by calling 218-477-6502. Performances run July 16th through the 20th and July 23rd through the 27th at Bluestem Center for the Arts in Moorhead.
Welcome back to Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Craig Blumenschein. Tom Brousseau, host of the Great American Folk Show, has a thing for our state's opera houses. Today, we learn about the opera house in Mattock, a small town in Benson County, North Dakota.
I am completely fascinated with opera houses in North Dakota. The fact that there are any might surprise you. They can be found across the Peace Garden State. In some cases, they've simply not been able to stay with the times. As such, they're either abandoned or condemned and demolished. In other cases, they've been taken care of and are still in use today. A few weeks ago, we featured the Mattock Opera House and the remarkable story of how the town came together. Not only saved it from being demolished, they turned it into a thriving complex with a kitchen and a library and an events stage. In my hometown of Grand Forks, our opera house is downtown, right by the railroad tracks and the Red River. And while it's no longer used as an opera house, it is still there. We still have it. You can actually rent an apartment there. Our opera houses tell the tale of a budding North Dakota. And today, I'm going to take you to Ray, a small town in the western North Dakota part. It was founded in 1902. We're going to speak with a former caretaker of the Ray Opera House. Her name is Charlotte Haudenfield. Most people just call her Char for short. She's about to celebrate a milestone birthday, and as you will hear, she's the caretaker of all the town's memories. We're in Minot, North Dakota, but you're not from Minot originally. Where are you from originally?
Medora. But I came to Minot from Ray, North Dakota. Fun capital of the world. You make your own fun.
In Ray. Ray also has a nickname. It's called the Palace of the Grain.
It's Grain Palace. Mm-hmm. It's known for its wheat fields and grain growing.
What kind of a town is Ray?
It's about the size of, well, since I left there, it's grown some, but it's between 600 and 700 people. It grew some during the oil booms in North Dakota.
Can you tell me what life was like during your time in Ray, North Dakota?
Oh, it was lots of fun and busy. It's a busy little town, and I was involved in different things myself and my family, too. My family grew up there, went to college, got their degrees, and never came home.
But you stayed in North Dakota.
Yes, I've always been in North Dakota, yes.
You're proud to be North Dakotan.
Yes, absolutely.
And what are some of the things that you did in Ray, North Dakota when you were growing up?
I liked everything. I loved school and liked all the activities of school and participated in most everything that went on in the schools and outside. And I also worked while I was in high school. I served as secretary to the superintendent my junior and senior year in high school. And I also was secretary and bookkeeper for an oil company while I was in high school. And I played in a dance band in high school.
And would you play in the dance band?
Piano with a bunch of boys. And we were called the Swing Kings. And the director called me the Swing Queen because I was the only girl.
Do you remember some of the songs that you sang back then?
Oh, Whispering and Backtown Strutter's Ball were a couple.
And did you enjoy singing in addition to playing the piano?
I wasn't much of a singer, but I sang lots of things, yes.
And you danced a lot?
Yes, I've got shoes to show you today that proved I danced a lot.
Well, if you're just tuning in, this is the Great American Folk Show. We're visiting here with Shar Hodenfield. I'm paying you a visit here today, Shar, because I'm so interested in the town of Ray, North Dakota, which is where you grew up. And in particular, there's an opera house there. Well, let's talk about that opera house. What's your affiliation with the opera house in Ray, North Dakota?
Well, the opera house in Ray, it came to life as a grocery store and kind of a all-around store, and people lived in it, both upstairs and had the store down below. And then through the years, the building just stood idle for many years until some women decided to get it started for its original use. There have been several really nice things done to add to the museum, like the roof has been repaired and things inside has been done. And one of the persons that helped us was a lumberman, and he would, if we needed things done, he'd just come and volunteer his services and help us. And some of the people have given us display cases and things like that to help out.
The building was built in 1904?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Do you remember hearing about some of the productions that might have been in the opera house before your time?
Oh, they had a lot of participation there with special programming, musical programs, and there are even some of the instruments that were used in those early days that are in the museum.
When we think of opera, we think of Italian and we think of people singing up on the stage, but the opera houses that we know in our rural communities across the United States, not so much that kind of opera. There were a lot of artistic people in Ray, North Dakota when you were there.
Oh, I wouldn't brag about that, but I don't know. I wouldn't say there were very many. But just recently, as of this summer, two Ray kids, they're young adults now, have been at the opera house singing in New York City.
So we've gone from the opera house in Ray, North Dakota, to the big opera house, probably the biggest one in the United States outside of San Francisco, mm-hmm. in New York City. Well, how about that? Can you tell me about what you did at the Ray Opera House when you were there?
Well, I was one of the ones that helped out when it first became reorganized after many years of not being the opera house. And we put collections together from the people in the community, and they could either give it to us to put in the opera house as a keepsake from their families, or else they could sign a book stating that they were lending it to the opera house, and they could get it back if they wanted to retrieve it.
Can you tell us about what the opera house looks like and what are some of those items on display?
Well, I'd say there's a little bit of everything. There's mementos from World War I. There's uniforms from other services in the service. There's musical instruments. There's a collection of artifacts from Africa from a gentleman that lives in Rayette. And there's jewelry of all kinds. There's music from way back when it was popular. And a lot of things that are older from the school things that functioned in Ray. And band uniforms, things like that. And hats and clothing of years gone by. And the old telephone office switchboard is in there that used to run the telephone company in Ray before modernization came about.
So the opera house in Ray, North Dakota is no longer functioning as an opera house, as we've been discussing. Community events, musical performances, plays and stuff like that no longer happen in the opera house. It's just turned into a museum.
Yes, that's about it. And it's open on special occasions in Ray, and it is open all summer long. On Sundays especially, and it's run by different people that are willing to sit there for several hours. And then on Green Palace in Ray, which is in August, it's always open that day, and then a big crowd comes that day. And you can get in to see the artifacts and everything in the opera house. There's a phone number on the building itself, on the windows, that you can call people to come and be shown the things that are in there.
What is that story to you, all of those artifacts in the Ray Opera House?
I think one of the main things, and maybe to outside people, unless they really are interested in museums, if you're a resident or former resident of Ray, you remember all these people's names and the things that they've contributed to the museum. And at the time when I was quite active in it, we would have kids from school classes come to view the things that were in the museum. And when they got back to school, they had to write a theme on what they'd seen and what they liked the best. And I thought that was quite educational.
Well, gosh, Char, it has been a real pleasure visiting with you today. I heard you've got a birthday coming up, Char.
Oh, not until September, but I'll be 90 years old in September.
Thanks again, Char.
Yeah, you're welcome. It was fun to do this.
Grab your coat. Don't forget your hat. But leave your worries. Leave them on the doorstep. Life's sweet. Just direct your feet to the sun, sunny side of the street. Hop on that pitter-pat.
That was Tom Brousseau of the Great American Folk Show. You can stream episodes of The Great American Folk Show at prairiepublic.org and catch new episodes every Saturday at 5 p.m. Central right here on Prairie Public.
We'd like to thank the North Dakota Council on the Arts for supporting arts programming here on Prairie Public.
This is Dakota Daybook for July 24th. Nina Farley and her family were McIntosh County pioneers, having moved from Michigan in 1887. In 1891, she married John Wishick, a lawyer, banker, and politician. He was also a partner in Wishick and Lilly, a land office, which helped pioneers file homesteads. Nina and John came to be known as Mother and Father Wishick. Nina was very active in the community as a schoolteacher, local historian, devout Methodist, mother of eight, and membership in various clubs. She was also an artist, poet, and writer, with some of her poems published in anthologies. She'd been writing poems since Michigan, but had more time once the children were married and away. She often wrote on odd pieces of paper, such as envelope backs, letter backs, store paper, and scrap paper. After finding her poetry-filled scraps, her family encouraged her to compile a poetry collection, and so they did. The book, Roseberries in Autumn, was published in June 1938 in time for the town of Ashley's Golden Jubilee, marking its 50th year. The book is divided into three sections. The first, Pioneer and Western Poems, details a history of pioneer life and her personal story. The second section, Poems of Meditation and Sentiment, shows quiet musings of a contemplative soul. In the last section, Nina added fun, odd bits. It's titled, A Little Nonsense Now and Then is Relished by the Wisest Men. The family published the book almost entirely themselves, with the printing done at the Ashley Tribune. The family folded, cut, and assembled the book on the long dining room table, which they dubbed the assembly room. They bound the books in the town library, calling it the binding plant. Throughout the process, the air was fairly quivering with thrill and excitement. On this date, in 1938, the Fargo Forum reported on the book and the unique publishing process. Many other North Dakota newspapers also carried the story. Roseberries in Autumn was reprinted that September, receiving widespread praise. The Bismarck Tribune called it one of the most interesting books in the history of North Dakota. Nina went on to write Along the Trails of Yesterday, a story of McIntosh County in 1941. With continued demand, both books were reprinted in 1980, more than two decades after her death. Today's Dakota Datebook, written by Cody Goring. I'm Ann Alquist.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding by Humanities North Dakota.
And that's a wrap for this edition of Main Street. We are grateful that you've spent time with us today. A quick programming note, this program will not re-air tonight at 7 p.m. Central as it normally does. Instead, Prairie Public will bring you live coverage of President Biden's address to the nation. Tomorrow on the show, we have a wonderful conversation with author Kevin Fedarko about his life-changing 750-mile trek through the Grand Canyon. The book's called A Walk in the Park, and it's a true story. It's a book review you won't want to miss. Also on the show, Matt Olean, another slasher movie. He'll review the movie Long Legs, and Dave Thompson will stop by for his weekly review of the news. That's all tomorrow on Main Street, and we hope you can join us.